Hey everybody, it's Tad from marketingforhippies.com, and I am here joined by Alex Baisley of bigdreamprogram.com. And so excited to be sharing Alex with you during this call. If you haven't come across Alex or aren't really familiar with him, you are super in for a treat. I met Alex years ago in over the internet, but then eventually in Ontario, and Alex has a real special genius for helping people figure out how to take all these bizarre interests and passions and strengths and things they're good at and their fascinations and weaving them into something that can actually generate income for them. And what I really have loved about Alex's perspective over the years is very practical, very doable, very down-to-earth stuff that it's easy to go to workshops where it's like, find your life purpose, find your passion, and then create some huge empire, some huge thing out of that, and you can almost feel ashamed if you're not doing this massive thing. And Alex takes a little bit of a slower approach to it, and the whole idea of niche projects, in fact, came directly out of his idea of income projects, and people creating small little projects, little things that they could do that are small, doable, that could generate income for them right away and help them transition out of whatever they're doing. Because I can tell you, I've seen so many people who were doing something they hated, a 9-to-5 job working for the man, and then leapt into something new without any kind of safety net. And that can be a very stressful way to do it, especially if it turns out that the niche you picked, like, oh, I'm really excited about this, and then you actually start doing it and you realize that's not the thing you want to do, but you've totally abandoned your safety net. So his notion of income projects, I thought, was one of the most brilliant pieces. And I thought it was just really brilliant at helping people figure out what their niche is, and not just the niche in terms of the who, which we're really focusing on this call, but the niche in terms of the nest, what is our place in the world, and so brilliant at helping people find that. So I couldn't be more excited to have him here. Alex, good to have you.
Thank you so much, Tad. Oh, my God. Okay, blushing a little bit there. Thanks so much.
So I would love it maybe if you could just start off giving people just a bit of your background of how you got to be here doing this kind of work, how you kind of really stumbled across the whole importance of lifestyle in this. And start there.
Sure thing. Well, I guess I'm very familiar with your work, Tad, and I know that you've been talking with everyone about the wound thing, and, I'm an example of that. I'm here doing what I'm doing now with the Big Dream Program because I was so bad at it all my life. Like, I just made really bad choices in terms of my career and my work. The first one was commercial diving, and if anyone ever sees a picture of me, I'm 6 feet tall and weigh about 50 pounds. I'm skinny, and skinny people, struggle with commercial diving. And I did it for 10 years. I kind of fell into it. And the last 5 years of it, I don't know, some people can probably relate to this. Every single morning that I drove to work, there's a ship horn going off here. I'm by the ocean. And I'm going, what the hell is that? I thought maybe the house was on fire. No, it's a ship going by. But every morning going to work, I had this sinking feeling in my stomach. I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing in this world, and I don't know what that is. And, so for another 5 years, I went and plopped in the ocean. And anyway, weird kind of twist of events. I won't go into the whole story, but very bizarre choice for me. I ended up on a Reiki Level 1 course. I wasn't really open-minded to that kind of thing at the time. But anyway, I did end up on this weekend course. And I wasn't too sure what I thought of it. But long story short is I went and I took a level 2 after that, and it started really making a difference in my life. I was just happier and lighter, and things were working better. And I thought, wow, this could be something I would like to do for a living. So I went and took every course I could take when I wasn't in the water, and eventually ended up opening up my own Reiki clinic. And I was living in Ireland at the time. And this kind of gets into the second place where I made another really bad choice, but I can forgive myself. I didn't know any better. But what I learned out of this has become my passion and my full-time work. I love it. And that is this. I had a Reiki clinic for 5 years, eventually moved to Canada, back to Canada, set it up here. Everything was fine, but 5 years into it, Tad, I was walking to work. Everything was better. I was warmer. I get to make a difference in people's lives. Everything was awesome, and I couldn't understand why I was going to work and feeling this pit in my stomach again. It scared the hell out of me, actually. And we had made a big life change, my wife and I, for me to be able to do that, as you can imagine, compared to commercial diving. And, you know, I thought, is there something wrong with me? I just can't be content or something. And anyway, this went on for another 2 or 3 years. And I'm the primary breadwinner. My wife and I chose that one of us would stay home, you know, with the children. So, or at least most of the time. And there was a lot of pressure and a lot of stress in terms of making that work. And I thought, oh my God, am I changing my mind again? Like, what's happening here? So it did go on for another 2 or 3 years. I didn't know what else to do. And it was one day, Tad. It was an April day. I remember it so clearly. You know, we rarely have these big blinding flashes in our lives. They tend to be kind of more slow flashes that take
right.
years. But it was after lunch, and I was sitting there having a coffee, and it just all came totally clear to me what the problem was. And I realized this, that I'm a gypsy by nature. I really like to be out and about and have a free schedule and be able to travel. And I had built myself a business of my own accord, of my own free will. I built myself a business that felt a lot like a prison. I realized that I was inside 9 to 5 in the same office, and loving the work didn't come into it. I loved it for a few hours, but past that, my God. And so it seems so obvious looking back on it now, but I realized in that moment that for a lot of people, especially creative, smart, buzzing, change the world type people, lifestyle is not a luxury. And now that I'm working at this full time, I'm seeing it over and over and over and over again. It doesn't matter if you want to be a carpenter or a hairdresser or a Reiki master or a yoga or a speaker or whatever. For a lot of us, we have to figure out what kind of a lifestyle we will thrive in, and then build the business to suit that. And it may not be a magic bullet, to use that kind of crazy term, but it's a silver bullet, is it? Anyway, it doesn't matter. But it's a solid foundation, a foundation that works with the person and who they are. So long story short, that's how I ended up here. So I was doing the Reiki, and I finally decided, you know what? I care so much about life direction, and it was the thing I loved working with Reiki clients the most on anyway. If they came in with a sore shoulder, I cared. But if they came in saying, what am I doing with my life? I really cared. I loved that. I came alive, and I thought I had some ninja skills, and I certainly had a lot of experience of what it feels like when it's not right. So I decided to make a workshop around that and see if anyone would show up. And beginner's luck, I had 25 people, I think, show up on that first workshop, and I never looked back. So from that April afternoon, 3 months later, I had built myself a completely different style of business where I was in the Reiki clinic one day a week, which I still am, and it's awesome. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of the long and short of how I ended up here.
I love it. I love it. What really strikes me is that Alex and I did a few workshops in Oakland, California together that we called Marketing for Hippies and Gypsies, and it went very well. And it really struck me one time how, you know, when we talk about marketing, it's easy to think about, okay, well, how do I make what I'm doing sort of unique for the client and all of that? And a lot of what Alex is talking about in terms of really figuring out what is the kind of lifestyle you want, what's the kind of lifestyle that you thrive in, and what are your own kind of quirks and uniquenesses that you can be bringing more to what you do, that also then makes what you do really unique. And it's easy to start with, who do I want to work with? But you can also start with, well, what is the kind of lifestyle I want? What is unique about me? And how do I bring that into my work? And then kind of reverse engineer it of who would be into that? You know, who would be drawn to that? What kinds of people? It's kind of a yin yang of niching, and both of those can work really well.
Right. Well said.
Yeah. So The thing I'm most excited to talk to you about today, Alex, is this idea of income projects. I'm curious, I've never actually talked to you about this, but I'm curious where that idea came from for you, because I
Gosh,
think it's a brilliant thing.
that is such a good question. And you know what? I have no recollection of where it comes from. I don't know if it sort of came out of my own life or if it came out of clients. Because I know I work a lot with clients, and I worked with even more of them back then, who had jobs. I work with more primarily people who are already starting to slip into entrepreneurship now. But anyway, they still had jobs, and nevertheless, they had these things that they certainly had a dream, some sort of dream of self-employment. That's how we ended up talking. And but what to do, you know? And there's just enormous pressure about that when people try to make some decision about the rest of their I'm trying not to do my usual cursing here, Tad, but I get all excited about this stuff. But people get so effing, caught up around making the perfect decision around this. And the truth is, it's impossible. It's like saying, what's going to be my favorite song for the next 5 years? Nobody can do that, right? And because you don't know what's going to come out tomorrow. And so, again, the kinds of people that are on this call, certainly, I'm guessing you probably, if you look back 6 months into the past of your life, you've changed a lot in 6 months, and you've changed a lot in the last year, and you're going to change a lot in the next 6 months. So we can't know who we're going to be, what exactly we're going to be doing or be interested in. And so I found that people get so caught up in making perfect, decisions about what sort of business, or even smaller, not smaller decisions, but within the business decisions like niche, and that they wouldn't do anything. And you get someone with an astonishing gift to share with a few people or maybe the whole world, and they're not doing anything, and they slog back to their job. And that was breaking my heart. And I knew it didn't have to be so. And when I looked at a lot of us that are doing some form of entrepreneurship sort of full time, what you see in almost everybody you work with are projects. You see they're doing a project for a month or 6 months or something like that. They may be very similar to each other, they may have some differences. But income projects seem to be what's already out there, and I just kind of noticed it and named it. And so what I found is that when we started talking about that with clients, it was just an it just totally opened up a door. They were totally willing to try something, like on a Saturday sort of thing. There was one guy that I was talking to about he wanted to get out of. He was a full-time laborer, put it that way. He had his own company, carpenter or whatnot. Very heavy labor that he was doing, a lot of sinking fence posts and basements and backyards and all that kind of stuff. Liked his work, but had five children and was also kind of wondering, can I do this all my life? And my gosh, it would be nice to do, to have some break from the heavy labor of my job. And when we get talking about sort of income projects, and we had talked before, this guy and I, he and I are friends. We share pints once in a while. We talked before and really had no kind of particular breakthroughs, but once I brought up income projects, we get talking about something that he's interested in, straw bale homes. And I think I probably told you that story, Tad, before. Do you think it's appropriate to tell that short story right now?
I've shared it a few times actually already in
Have you?
with this.
Perfect. Okay, I'm glad I
Yeah.
asked.
It's a
But
great
that was,
example.
again, that's, I'm glad you said that. So that's just an example of how an income project can be very freeing, and it can unlock the creative juices that we're good at in the first place that get squashed when we're trying to make some big cranky decision for the rest of our lives, you know?
I'm wondering if you can share other examples of like little income projects that the people have come up with that were sort of low commitment, or yeah, things that where they could experiment. I'm wondering what other ones you've seen or done.
It's a good way to say it, with the low commitment. Partially because it's allows a person to try something with almost no risk, and you will learn from it, absolutely. And what you learn can then make the next decision, that much better. But I think the other big reason to talk about it, just before I share an example,
Yeah.
is that I don't know how to bring this up, kind of, without going into the the whole big thing. But anyway, we're vulnerable. People are vulnerable. You know, we're scared in some cases that people won't like us or they won't like what we're offering and all that kind of. I mean, there's a certain amount of stage fright involved in entrepreneurship. It just goes with it. And I don't know if that ever completely goes away. But when we feel like that, we can, and I know I did for years, is hide behind building something perfect, or what, you know, as close to perfect as I could get it. So I would make these grandiose plans. You know, what started off as an idea would suddenly grow arms and legs, and all of these things that I thought should go into it. And it was the grandest idea in the world by the time I got finished with it, you know, and completely unwieldy and often impossible to start. And I have a box full of journals full of those sorts of ideas, you know. And so sometimes they work, but so often they don't. You know, ideas in terms of income projects, niche projects, are a bit like planting apple seeds. Not every one is going to turn into a tree. Anyway, but to go into a story about low commitment. Yes, there was a woman, she's in Wales, and I don't know, stop me again if you've kind of shared this story already.
No, I haven't. I think
the single moms one.
Yeah, no, the straw bale one I think is the only one of yours that
I've
shared.
Okay. So, yeah, she was talking, she's been an artist all her life, and not just an artist, she's really, really good, and she's one of these people that everything she fucking touches turns into artwork. So she can't make a cookie without it being beautiful and you want to frame it, you know. It's just amazing. And I always just really loved this woman. We knew her when we lived in Ireland. And but she always wanted to, you know, be able to use this talent to make a living and to make some kind of contribution to the world, you know. And she did it in small little ways here and there. She made sushi for a local place and whatnot, but it was never much of an income. It was just a little bit of money here and there. But she always kind of dreamed of being able to do more with it, you know, that feeling we have inside us, like, there's something great in me trying to get out. And so we got talking about income projects, and what brought it up was I talked to her after not seeing her for a few years when we moved back to Canada. And I said, what are you doing now? And she said she's considering taking a course in art therapy. And so we talked about it, asked her how long it was. Well, she has children at home. She's going to do it in the evenings. It was going to take 5 years to complete this course, a university, open university course. And I said, oh, wow, okay. Are you excited about it? And she said, well, I don't know if I'm excited or not, but I really want to do something with my art. Okay. And then I asked her, you know, what do you have any thoughts about what you would work at, you know, when you're done? And she said, well, most of them get employed in the, believe it or not, in the hospital system, which is great in Britain. And so that's what she figured she would do. And I said, you know, what are the hours and stuff? Because I know that one of her most important lifestyle, going back to the lifestyle, one of her most important lifestyle things was her kids and being home, you know, when her kids get home from school at least and stuff like that. And so really when we were talking, I wasn't trying to dissuade her from it. I was just wondering, wow, that's a big decision. And something wasn't sitting well with me. And so we talked for a little while. And we ended up coming up with an idea at that. It only took us half an hour to come up with it. But the idea was like the idea she had been waiting for years. Oh. And I don't mean to have such a build up to it, because it really was a very small, simple, elegant idea. But it really came completely out of her mouth, just with kind of the right questions. But here's the thing. When we got talking about who, so back to your niching and everything, we got talking about who. And, you know, who do you really feel for these days? And so the story came out that she was fairly recently became a single mom and got divorced and kind of went through that whole grieving process of divorce. And she ended up finding that she had developed a lot of friendships at the school with other single moms. It started off as a practical thing in that they could babysit for each other and that sort of thing. But then, of course, there was the emotional, there was a bond there, you know, a common experience. And so she found that was great. It was very supportive, and she found it helpful for the first few months. And then what happened was she started to find that there was a lot of, at least in this particular group, a lot of bitterness, a lot of complaining, a lot of staying stuck. And she got to the point where she really just wanted to start a new chapter. And she found that it was becoming a kind of a negative place to be, even though she loved them, and so that was bothering her. The second thing was, I don't know what question brought it up, but she said that it's amazing how many of them kind of talk about my art and how much they would love to explore their creative sides. And she was finding that it was almost a common wish with the women that she was with. And so long and short of it is that we ended up coming up with this idea of an income project that would cost nothing to try. And it was this. I wondered if some of those women would be interested in coming to her house on, say, Monday mornings after they dropped off the children at school, and they had some free time anyway, come for the morning to her house, and she would teach an art project. She would do something. And so she started really thinking about that. And then she decided she was going to add something to it. Once you start thinking about niche, then you're thinking about people, and so you can add stuff to it instead of just thinking about the theme, which was art. And so she decided she wanted to see if they'd be interested in this whole idea of a new chapter, new beginning as well. Were they feeling the same as her about the sort of bitterness thing? So she kind of made this poster for the wall, this tongue-in-cheek thing saying no bitching allowed sort of thing with an arrow through
right.
it. And she was going to bring in kind of something inspiring at the first of every session, like some quote or some YouTube video or something to that would be opening feeling to a new chapter, you know, and then do the art project and have tea, biscuits, and all that kind of thing. And when we really stopped to work it out, we reckoned that even people with some of them with not very much income could definitely afford the 10 or 12 pounds or whatever it was, euros now, it doesn't matter, to come for an art project. And she reckoned she was on living on government assistance at that point, which was a tremendous embarrassment for her. She never thought she'd be in that position. And she worked out that with just Monday mornings, with just a handful of people, she could earn the same as she would have on the government assistance. And so when I said, you know, what do you think of that idea? Like, how does it compare to the art therapy idea? And she said, oh, my God, it's way better. Like, this is exactly what I wanted to do. And I just thought, that is so cool. I'm so glad. So, you know, we always get that feeling like these things are right in front of us, and often we're just looking a little bit too grand. And the idea of income projects and your take on that niche project, I just think is going to set so many people free. I think the people that are listening to your course and taking this on board and trying niche projects will be just miles ahead of the people that are in their room all by themselves building a very large project that hasn't been, you know, really tried for them yet.
Mm.
That wasn't a short story, was it?
I love that. It's such a great example. Can you share there's two that come to mind. One is the literary pub crawl, and the other one is the triathlete podcast guy.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Pardon me. Sorry, sipping my tea here. Yeah, the literary pub crawl. That was a guy who I don't know if exactly relates to niching or not, but it certainly relates to an income project. But, he was a guy that he wasn't trying to build a career for himself or anything like that, nothing big and heavy. He was just a student, and he needed to earn some extra dough. And his only choice that he felt he had was working at Tim Hortons or something like that, and he would have done it. But we ended up chatting, and, is there something else? And so I got asking him about his interests, you know. And he was very honest with me. He said, I really only have two interests. I said, I don't know, here it comes. And he said, pubs. So he liked his beer. And manly authors. I said, what the fuck's a manly author? But anyway, he said, like, Ernest Hemingway and Hunter S. Thompson and, you know, the man's man authors like that. I said, oh, right, I get it. And he said, but you can't, you know, I can't make money off those interests. And I just remember thinking, Jesus, don't be so sure, you know. This is fun. And so anyway, we came up with this idea together, and it was this, a literary pub crawl. And it was really elegant. I smile from ear to ear when I think about it now. And so the idea was this, that he was going to organize a pub crawl, and he was going to, I don't know where to start the story, he was going to charge X amount per head to go on this thing. And there was a few aspects to it. Most importantly was when you went into a pub, or each pub, he was going to read a passage from one of these amazing authors, one of these a drop jaw passage that would go, oh my God, that's amazing, you know. And so you would listen to that, so you'd get this little tiny tidbit of appreciation for the author, and then you would be served the author's favorite drink. And so it was mojitos, I think, in Ernest Hemingway, and some kind of rum daiquiri or whatever for Hunter S. Thompson, etc. You get the idea. And so there was this really fun aspect to it of drinking the drink that Hemingway drank, right? And but there was all sorts of elegance in terms of the finances around it too, because he wasn't looking to earn a lot of money, but you know, just a little bit more than minimum wage maybe or something like that. And the idea was that it's been a couple of years since I told the story, and I kind of forget the exact figures, but the basic idea is that he called all the pubs ahead of time to set it up, of course. Made sure there's room, made sure the bartenders were alert to the drink and so on. But he was able to get a discount from the pubs for bringing a group of people in. So he got the discount, and instead of keeping the discount for himself, he passed the discount right on to the people. So they were paying, I'm just going to say $20. I don't know, can't remember exactly. They paid $20 to come on this literary pub crawl, but why would they? You know, it's just drinks, and unless they were super interested in it. But the way the math worked out was that they ended up getting discounts on their drinks all along the way, and they stopped at quite a few places. So they pretty much paid for their literary pub crawl fee. So he much more or less got his fee from the discount from the bars. So that was it. I thought that was just a really fun idea. You know, we were talking about wounds and stuff like that, and you know, a lot of businesses are based on those sorts of things, and awesome, mine too. But every once in a while you encounter one of these fun, light sort of ideas, and that was definitely his.
Nice. And the triathlete podcast one.
Oh, yes, right. Oh, yeah, it's a couple of years since I told that story too. But the idea was, now, I'm trying to get my facts straight here. He had, how did that work? He had a job, corporate job, I think. Stop me if you hear me going wrong on this. So I try to get it
okay.
Right. And he got laid off, basically, was the gist of it. And he was trying to figure out what he wanted to do, you know, what he could do. And, you know, often we're not honest with ourselves, I think, about actually what we really want to do. We just think, okay, if I have to work, this is the kind of area that I would like to do in. But sometimes it's really helpful to just go to a coffee shop or a pub or sit by the beach or something and just say, okay, let's be honest here. If I didn't have to work, what would I be doing? And often there's gems in that. Like, whoa, wait now, don't be so sure. Maybe there is a way you can make income from that. Now, that reminds me of another story of a guy going through the Adirondacks for a couple of months. If you think of it, remind me of that one. But anyway, so this guy got laid off, and what do I do? And all he really wanted to do was train to be a triathlete. He loved it. He loved triathlons. And I have some family members into that sort of thing, family members, friends, and those people are passionate, man, when they get into that. And it's a lot of work. And sometimes it becomes a problem, too, in the sense if they have families and so on, it really becomes like a third, you know, job to do it well. Anyway, so he thought, I'd love to be just doing that, you know. And so I can't remember the middle bit, but the basically what happened in the end was that he set up a business for himself online, virtually, basically being a resource for triathletes. So he loved to read triathlon magazines. He just devoured material online and stuff. And he realized he put a lot of time and effort into that. And he wondered if he brought a lot of that material, even filtered a lot of that material and brought it to one place online, would it be something that people wanted? And he ended up creating a membership site. So I think it was $17 a month, I think he was charging for that. And he just kept adding stuff to it, which just basically, again, when you have your niche kind of thing, then you realize what they need and want. You can, you know, add different things that you wouldn't think of to that because of the niche. So he added like logs where you could go in and actively log all your details and stuff for your exercises, and it would spit you back graphs and that sort of thing of your progress. And I thought this was the best bit. Was that he did podcasts. That was one of the ways he promoted himself, was doing podcasts, and he did them from the bike. Of all things, eh? I thought that is brilliant. And of course, he's probably breathing a bit hard, you know, and sweating over his microphone. But triathletes are used to that. They don't mind that. It'd be different if I was doing it. I would just sound creepy. But he, so I just thought that was awesome, you know, and I just think there's such a lesson, beg your pardon, a lesson in that for all of us, including me. You know, this is a real evolution, even though this is really my focus. It just forces me to be more and more honest every few months about, okay, what do I really want to do? You know, what do I really, really want to do? And it's just such a great place to start even the niching question, I think, too, because, you know, if we're picking a niche is one thing, but if I just said, you know, if I didn't have to work, if I was going, I'd probably want to socialize at some point, or I'd want to interact with people even secondhand. I'd want to read their books, or I'd want to hear their music or something. So we interact with each other even if we're not together socially. And the ways that we like to interact with other people seem to me a really good guide as to maybe how we could set up our business. And so where I was leading to there was the just the coffee shop thing, you know, which you've talked about. And that is, if I didn't have to work and if I went to a coffee shop, what kind of a coffee shop would I like? And what kind of people are in there? And what are they? And if I ended up locked in there for hours, what would I love to be talking about? And that, you know, I can answer that easily. And I think most people can. And so, well, how about, is it possible then to build a business based on interacting with the people that you want, in the way that you want to interact with them? So together in a group or whatever that looks like, out camping, hiking, I don't know. And then what are the topics and who are they? What kind of personalities and what do they do? And, you know, that's a really good start, I think, to the niching discussion. And I think it's very guiding.
I agree.
I'm sipping my tea here.
You'd mentioned something about the Adirondacks.
Oh, yes. So I just met this guy in the Adirondacks. I'm not a happy backpacker. I just don't like it. But my son loves it, okay? So three dads and a whole bunch of kids, we all ended up in the middle of bear-infested Adirondacks. It's a beautiful place. But anyway, I didn't sleep a wink. And met this guy who was hiking the Adirondacks. He was an engineer who left his job on purpose for, Jesus, I don't remember, months anyway. And he had spent, I think it was 2 months, if I think it was that, close to that anyway, just doing the, the Appalachian Trail. And loving it. And he was disappointed when we met him. He was disappointed he only had 2 or 3 or 4 weeks left or something before he had to go back to work, you know. And so, of course, we ended up into a big discussion because of I'm so interested in this kind of stuff, you know. You're doing this. That's unusual. It's very unusual for an engineer to take time off work and hike for 2 or 3 solid months, you know. And he was just the coolest guy, quiet, but really nice personality and stuff. And I just thought there's got to be a way for that guy earn money doing that, you know. And we didn't come up with a totally crystal clear idea or anything like that, but I bet you if we put that in front of your group now with all the creativity in it, that you would probably come up with 40 or 50 possible ideas of how that guy could share that experience. I mean, I even talked about, like, would you be willing to carry like a satellite phone or something like that? Like, would you enjoy kind of sharing bits from the road or that sort of thing? And he said, yeah, that would be great fun. So I don't know if anybody would want that exactly, but there's got to be a way to do it, you know. And so, again, it just comes back to the whole idea of setting up a business based on what we'd be doing if we didn't work.
Yeah. What about, there was what was the other one I was thinking of?
I definitely have more stories here. Some that you may not even know. So if you just kind of want me to pull out a story or two, then...
Yeah, just keep going.
There's a woman that I'm working with right now. Now, the last couple of stories, I haven't really asked her permission if I could share them, but I don't see any reason why they would... I think they would be very happy about the publicity. But I'm working with a woman at the moment. If the story appeals to you, then you can, you know, get in touch with me, and I'll give you her name and details and stuff. But she and her daughter, it's surrounding her daughter, this story. Her daughter had a hard time in school, and they went to the Waldorf school, and so it was definitely an alternative school, you know, very fit for an artistic, creative child like this. But nevertheless, that sort of group class environment wasn't the best for her. She made it through to grade 7 and grade 8. Jeez, I can't remember which. But anyway, it doesn't matter. And decided, you know, I can't do this anymore. And they decided to consider the whole homeschooling thing. But I wasn't really aware of homeschooling. I wasn't aware of these details about it, that for a lot of people, it's basically taking the same curriculum from the school and just doing it at home. But they decided to pioneer something, and it took a lot of bravery because they took a lot of heat and questions from other family members, from other people that said, oh, my God, you're messing up her future and stuff. They decided to design their own education for her. And basically it came down to the daughter. And she's totally like a mature, ambitious, wonderful, curious person, just beautiful, beautiful person. And what would you do? You know, what would you like to do? And we're asking the same questions as entrepreneurs, at least, as grown-ups, you know. It's a wise question. What would you like to do? And so what would you like to do? And so she ended up designing her own education based on what she was passionate about at the time and trusting that her own passions and heart would lead her, you know. And, oh, my God, they had a really hard time making these decisions. But they finally got their heads around them. It took a lot of pressure. They weren't even sure they were going to make it through, but they almost had to. And the education she designed, this girl, for herself, for the year, is like a dream. Oh, my God. Mm. So she was working in a horse barn 2 or 3 mornings a week, doing all the work around the barn and getting free lessons and learning all about the business of horses. Loved it.
Wow.
She pursued her own art and creativity in her own time, and she started exploring writing, illustrating fantasy stories, so kind of storyboard-type things. She explored a bunch of different things. She was very interested in massage. She was interested in anatomy, a few similar things like that. So between herself and her mother, they just went out and found great mentors. So she worked with she was able to visit and chat with a doctor for a while who helped her get her head around the chambers of the heart and all the anatomy and all that kind of stuff. And she came home and illustrated notebooks of this stuff. And none of it with any particular intent. But, I mean, just as you're listening to this, you think a child designing their own path forward based on their passions has got to be a good thing. Mm-hmm. It just has to be. It is intuitively, you know. And so she did all of this, and she didn't care for reading, and she didn't care for math. And in the first year, she did very little of either, so there was none of this kind of usual pressure. But by the second year, through a weird twist of events, basically a friend was reading a book that she thought sounded very interesting. She ended up reading the book. Once she got started, she couldn't stop. She read the whole series, and then another series, and then she was reading all the time. And, you know, so this kind of thing can come up and take its place in the natural timing of life. And then math, she discovered that though she didn't like math when it's theoretical, she really took to math when it came to the business of a horse farm, say, for instance. And so she started learning. She started teaching herself business math. And so the whole story is a big success. She's 2 years into it now. And here's where we're coming to the story here. Her mother and her have gone through so much pressure, tears, insecurity, and joy and success with this journey that the two of them have taken that almost nobody knows about. They want to know if anyone wants to hear about it. They want to know if anybody else is in the position where they're feeling alone and they want to design maybe something for themselves. And they're stuck because the world doesn't want them to. And so it's very current. We're just talking about it now. I'm just about to send out an email to my list sort of introducing people to this woman. And it's so simple and elegant and costs nothing in terms of talking business now and income projects, in the sense that she's just going to be on the phone. So if you want to have you know, a free conversation. I think we talked about for 20 minutes or something like that, just to see if, you know, she's got something that would be helpful to that other parent. And if so, you can book a session, and it costs X amount of money, and you can talk to her and perhaps the daughter, and almost a counseling style of thing, you know, and from a person that's been there and walked that road. I can't remember why I started that story, Ted. I just find it very, very moving. And I just kind of intuitively feel like there are people out there in that position that go, oh, my God, I didn't even think of it. I didn't even know I could design my own education for my child. And I think she's going to, make some waves.
It really lifts up for me how often we figure something out in our life. We experiment with something, we try, and we get good at something, we develop some skill. And yet how seldom people go that next step of thinking, well, other people might actually be interested in knowing that. Or it's easy to assume. You know, like just the other day I went to do a meeting with this group called Sea Returns.
Okay.
A carbon community. It's all about, they go into homes and do energy audits and then retrofits. And I was going in, I just felt like, what do I have to say? And sometimes I'll still feel like, I don't know what I have to say. But then I'm sitting there like, oh, okay, I know a lot.
Right.
You know, it just kind of reminded me as they were sharing their own marketing, and I could see the blunders they were doing. And it's very easy to discount what we know and to discount the experiences that we've had, and that there might be people, who'd be so grateful to learn it.
I think so, Ted? And again, the beauty of income or niche projects is a person can try it out. You know, I think an ideal income or niche project, right? You might disagree with me on this. I don't know. But I often find an ideal, at least in theory, is once we kind of have an idea, can we float it out within a couple of days in such a way that we can get some feedback? So, for instance, let's just write something about it, or let's do an interview or something. Let's float it out on Facebook, or let's find people with a lot of friends on Facebook and see if they'll float it out for us just to see what the reaction is. And, you know, and I think that I didn't do that, you know, my first years. I would always hold back until I thought, you know, something was whatever. And it would take me forever to do this. And I find that people that do that are starting interacting and engaging around this topic with people right from the very start. And they often just do an easier and better job of their business journey that way, I think.
Yeah, that's funny. It's something I talked about in the intro of one of the blunders in people with their niches. They tried it on their own. They don't have any conversations with people.
Right.
And I think the idea of floating it is really important, because if you hone in on a niche and it's really clear, and you know, and you get good grades, everyone's like, yes, that's a good niche, and you feel really excited about working with that niche around their problem, and you come up with a project, and you're like, you're really excited, but you float it out. And this one I've been noticing. Like, if the response isn't a super enthusiastic, like, wow,
yes,
how do I find out more information about that?
Yes.
It's probably not ready. Like,
something needs tweaking, eh?
Yeah, one of my fun projects this summer, it could be an income project, but I've just chosen to give the money to the artist, is doing a bunch of secret streetcar concerts. We've got a trolley in Edmonton.
Oh, I saw some pictures of that on Facebook. It looked awesome.
It's been so great. This trolley goes across the high-level bridge, so it's 150 feet above the river. It's the highest river crossing of any streetcar in the world. And
holy,
it's like a 100-year-old streetcar and a 100-year-old bridge. The streetcar took like 35,000 hours of volunteer time to restore it. And
oh, my gosh.
Money. Amazing. And so we've been renting it out. And we'll take the streetcar to the middle of the bridge, and it stops in the middle of the bridge over the Edmonton River Valley at sunset, and there's a concert on it.
Oh my gosh.
I'm charging like $20 a person. Streetcar costs about $300. The rest of the money goes to the musician. I could make money on it if I charged a little bit more, and you know, I've been happy to just let the artists have all the money.
Right.
But what's interesting in terms of as a case study of a project is, I've been asking people, like, what are you doing for fun this summer? You know, and people then ask me back, and I'll mention the streetcar thing. I'll say, hey, I'm doing the secret art concerts. And not everybody, but so many people, their eyes widen, and they say,
Right. It does have that instant thing, eh? Yeah.
Yeah. They're just like, how do I get on the list? Can I find out about that? You know? And to me, if you're not getting that kind of a response where they're actually actively asking to be on the list, or like saying, oh my God, I'm a friend who this would be perfect for. If you're not
Right.
getting that,
Right.
it probably needs to be tweaked. It probably could be made to be hotter and more engaging and more fun or more simple or something.
That is true, eh? Or a slight change in the who. Maybe the same idea to a slightly different who.
Yeah, exactly. And I think
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, it seems to, beg your pardon, it seems to start with the who in terms of like really honing in on that. And which is why it's like if you have that who clear, the projects almost inherently are going to be a lot more attractive. But still, it's good
Right.
to float and to see what the response is. And if you're not getting that kind of popping response,
Yeah.
it's really good to just pause and be like, okay. Either, yeah, we need to tweak the who because maybe it's too broad and too vague, or
Yep.
we need to tweak the project itself.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes
Yeah.
so much sense. Yeah.
Any other stories or examples come to mind of projects
Yeah,
that you
there's a guy I've been working with recently that I just love this. I'd never even really kind of considered this niche before, but he was a guy that was in the corporate environment all his life, absolutely went through the kind of overwork, burnout of that environment and so on, and ended up kind of moving into business coaching for corporate coaching, if you will.
right.
And excelled at that. He's just great at what he does all the time, this guy. He's just amazing. But he really started thinking about a couple of things. One is his lifestyle and, dreams like being able to walk his daughter to school. The simplest things that become so precious when you don't have them. And a who, a very particular who. And I think I was telling you about this guy, Steve. And his who is, get this for close and defined, the person in a corporate environment who's been promoted to a leadership position and they're in their first 2 years of it, basically. And when he really, I didn't couldn't even relate to that that niche myself until he really started talking about it, and I got really excited about it right along with him, because there's a couple of very set things that go on for a lot of the people in that position. They've often been promoted from non-management positions, so they were just good at what they did. So suddenly now they're managing people doing that thing, which is a whole different thing altogether. And maybe in fact they shouldn't be, or they might choose otherwise, but a lot of them really do like it and they want to navigate these brand new waters of working with people. So that alone, I think found it very intriguing, and he had clearly five or six really solid ideas of how he could help these people, and they had one serious common problem, and that was in the first couple of years especially, they felt too shy to go to their boss or superiors to ask for help if they were struggling, because they were scared it would look like a sign of weakness. Maybe he wasn't the right guy for the job. And
Right.
so because of that, there is really this, and so they don't necessarily often receive help from within the corporation, or they just get the cookie cutter corporate stuff, which is not always helpful. So this guy is a third party, and he's helping these people. But even more than that, that's just the tip of the iceberg, because the bigger part of the iceberg is the fact that he's focusing very much so, at least in his wording, his filtering, the kinds of things he talks about, on the people who are the new leaders, the new corporate leaders, people who think differently, people who are sometimes of a younger generation and they're not the old guard anymore. And the corporate world, has got a lot to answer for and that kind of thing, but that doesn't mean everyone that's in it thinks that way. And he started talking about, all of the amazing new ideas and new ways of thinking that are in a lot of these organizations. And it's not necessarily getting fueled or nourished. And so the idea of having people together in group classes and so on, that are all in the same position, so they can almost nourish each other and give each other the courage to make braver decisions for the world and that sort of thing. And so it's just an amazing project all the way around. So that's Steve Gazzard is his name. And so I thought that was a really cool niche. And honestly, I don't think I've ever worked with anyone that had such a defined, clear niche. It, oh
Wow.
my God, it does make it so easy, doesn't it? I've never been that fortunate. I've never been able to define my niche, you know, as clearly as that. I just kind of get it enough that I can make things work. But
Right.
I thought that was a good story.
That's great. Anything else come up for you? I've got a couple I remember, but.
Oh yeah, you got one that you're thinking of?
Well, there's the life coach with the hiking.
Oh yeah, that's fun. That was kind of what would you call that? A niche project or an income? It doesn't matter. But he was a life coach in Colorado. Wonderful guy. He hosted a workshop that I was traveling around teaching workshops, and he hosted me there in Colorado. Lovely, lovely man, life coach, but he was feeling a bit, I'm going to say bored, I guess, with the work. Bored isn't quite the right word, but it's like stuck, like there's something needs to shift in this. And really he was in a similar boat to myself in the Reiki clinic. I think when it really came down to lifestyle-wise, where would you rather be instead of in your office talking on the phone, even though you love your work and your clients? He said, I'd be out in those mountains. And he just looked, you know, wistful as he talked about it. And I remember saying, I wonder if it's a dumb idea or not. I wonder if anybody would like to have their life coaching session with you out on the mountain or hiking on the mountain. And he said, oh, my God, I never thought of it. And so, you know, bless his heart, I think he probably the next call he got from a client that he works with, he said, here's this funny idea for you. What would you think of the idea of going, you know, up the mountain and having our session that way? The guy was thrilled. And so they hiked this mountain, and when they were done, the client said, that was the best session I have ever had in my life and by far the best session with you as well. You know, can we do this more often? So, of course they did, and he started mentioning it more and more. And do you know what else he did? Oh, this is a fun story. John Foster is his name. And he does also start it from a similar kind of idea. What does he call it? Moto Clarity. He does these motorcycle trips in the summertime. I can't remember how long they are just now off the top of my head. But anyway, they go from, you know, place to place in a convoy of motorcycles, all people that enjoy that, and combined with kind of life evolution type things. So he would obviously explain it much better than me, but they, you know, he gives people questions and things to think about, exercises perhaps to be doing, thinking about, meditating on while they're driving from one place to the next. And then they
Wow.
meet for lunch or something, and then they have a little chat. What did you think of that? You know, and they have this, of course, inner evolving sort of conversation. So it's not just
That's
chatting
so
about
sick
the bikes anymore. And I thought, oh, my God, that is a fucking brilliant idea. It's just so smart, blending a lifestyle interest with something that we're quite used to, which is, you know, life coaching or something like that, or at least those of us in the business are. And, people that can blend that. People that can blend something like life coaching with camping, parenting with kayaking trips. I mean, you're just naturally onto something interesting there. And it's just taking the lifestyle interest that you have already and blending it with the who's that you like and see and float it out and see what happens.
That's so great. Wow. I love that as a niche project.
Well, yeah, that's great, eh? And it doesn't have to be his full-time income. As a matter of fact, I don't know. Maybe even if it pays for itself, he's thrilled. He has several weeks on the bike doing his favorite thing, you know. But I expect he probably does earn money from it. But, yeah.
Well, and it's funny because, I mean, he gets to be on the bike and he gets that quality of life. But I just imagine, of course, the people who are wanting to be a part of this, that's what they want to be doing too. And they get to be on the bike. They get an excuse to be around those kinds of people. I'd love it if you talked a little about your notion of people paying for experiences.
Ah, yeah, I would love to. I'm no money expert, Tad. That's for sure. It's not necessarily my strength helping people with. But I've come to the conclusion, at least for myself and my clients, that there's four ways that a person can get money that I can think of. One is someone gives it to us, government, patron, spouse, or even past investments. We're giving it to ourselves. Number two is we get a job, which in these in the countries we're in is a free choice and a form of self-employment, if you will. I'm agreeing to be here for X amount of hours and do this. You're agreeing to pay me every Friday. The third way, and none of these are, this isn't hierarchy. These are all equal, whatever you can do and want to do. The third way is it's one form of self-employment, and that is to sell products or services. So obviously selling soap, toothbrushes, really cool homemade candies, I don't know, but also things like life coaching sessions or massage sessions or workshops and so on. The fourth way overlaps with the third, but it's a completely opposite way of thinking about things. The fourth way is to design experiences for people. So that experience could take the form of an hour-long massage. But when people that I work with start thinking about the idea of, I'm not just selling a massage, I'm not just doing a massage, I'm creatively designing experiences for people, suddenly something astonishing happens, almost always, instantly, like within 3 or 4 minutes. They start getting really creative, and they start thinking about the whole experience. This person is here. They start thinking about the room. They start thinking about the music. One woman, it led to a whole other income for her, and that was start talking about the experience of giving a massage. She was a massage therapist. And when we got talking about that, and we ended up talking about favorite who's as part of the discussion, and she absolutely loved brand new moms. Moms about to be, and moms that have just become, if you will, right? And she loved working with them, and she admitted that it was because it was very easy to be a hero with them. They were quite stressed out and tired, right? And so, you know, a normal massage, and she's still a hero. And but she started thinking about designing experiences for them, and it started to get her thinking out past the confines of the room that they were in. She started thinking about their lives while they were at home. And she started, one idea that came out of it was she started thinking of the idea of 1 minute, was it even less, like 30 second, I don't know, meditations for when a new mom is, you know, tired and stressed and hitting the roof kind of thing. These short little audio things. So she just started getting really creative about all these little simple, elegant ways she could improve. She might be able to improve the lives of these new moms, even outside her clinic. And so she started developing these ideas, you know. So where was I going with that? I can't remember. I kind of got off on a tangent there.
Well, it's to me, what that lifts up is, if we think about sort of what is the journey that the person that we're working with on. So there's the journey of, you know, the single mom, and she's island A, is she's exhausted, she's overwhelmed,
right.
She's snapping at her kids, she doesn't want to be. Island B is she's feeling, you know, rested, relaxed, peaceful, but she's pampered, she's craving to be just taken care of because she's taking care of everyone else, maybe.
Yeah.
And if we think about that island B of like, okay, she's really craving to be taken care of, to be pampered, to be relaxed or whatever, then the question is like, how do we not just sort of like offer her the tools, but how can we even create the experience of her being pampered? How can we like build everything around like how she wants that to feel? Like what would Island B be like for her? And how can we create that in the experience of working with us? And if we do that, if we create that experience of being so taken care of and pampered, you better believe she's going to want to be coming back. But it also, I think, gives us just so many more ideas for the type of projects that we might do. Because it's like, if I'm going to do a retreat, and it's with being pampered in mind, it's like, well, could we bring in a masseuse? Could we?
There you go. It suddenly unlocks that creative, all the creative ideas around that, eh? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's a different massage, because it might be like a retreat for young dudes. It might be about adventure. It might be about pushing it, like you know, rock climbing and that extreme stuff, but it might be very different. And so it's very hard to get creative when we have no idea who it's for. If it's just like, oh, I just want to do this energy healing retreat for everybody.
Right.
Well, then it's all about the boat. It's all about the energy healing. So it's like hard to get creative, hard to come up with really neat things.
It is. And it's harder to sell often, I think, certainly not as standouty. And often, I think even more importantly than that, just not, we're not as engaged enthusiastically as we would like to be. I mean, when I set up my Reiki clinic, I didn't know I was doing it, you know, incorrectly at the time, but I set up a Reiki clinic same way my teacher and every other Reiki person in the whole world sets up a Reiki clinic. You know, it was just cookie cutter. I just didn't even think otherwise. But to really start thinking about the experiences and designing something new and fresh and it, just based on what you care about. Well, don't even get me started. I just love that whole subject. So designing experiences for people, yeah, I think that's where it's at. And I do think that one curious thing I've noticed with those of us that are shy about selling, about marketing, about asking for money for things, right? It's easier for most people who feel like that to tell people about an experience they've designed that they're opening the doors to than it is to tell people about a service that they're offering. And I don't know why that is, but I can kind of feel it in my body that there just feels like a difference. Maybe it's because we've actually focused more on the other people in the designing experiences scenario. Maybe, I don't know. But it just tends to free people up a little bit more. I notice they get a little bit bolder about sharing what they've got coming up.
That's true. Yeah, that feels really – it's interesting. Well, like thinking about if I were to say I'm having a house versus
– Can you repeat that first bit again, Dad? Cut out.
Oh, yeah. Let me know if my voice gets warbly. Sometimes Skype gets weird.
Just then.
Just the difference between if I said, hey, I'm hosting a house concert versus, hey, I'm hosting a streetcar show.
Oh,
excited to talk about the streetcar show because it's unique. It's different. It's a whole experience to be on the bridge at sunset over the river valley and listening to a concert. Much easier. But so I think that it's part of it is really putting some thought and care into how do we make this such a cool thing that we're excited to share it.
Right.
I could have a house concert and I might say, you know, yeah, it's going to be a house concert, but it's an old timey dress up theme. So bow ties and suspenders and flapper dresses and, you know, and suddenly people are more excited about it. Because it feels like an event. It feels like a happening. It feels like, this is going to be a whole experience. And it doesn't take a lot. Like, you don't have to do a ton. It doesn't take 100 things. It might just take a couple things. But I think the source of those things that can make our niche projects really unique and different comes from really focusing on who is this group, what is it we could do to make it extraordinary and special, and the kind of thing that they'd want to tell everyone about. You know, and have it as a cool thing to share.
That's so true, right? Yeah.
There's
and
the typical.
And it often stems out of just the kind of quirky stuff that the entrepreneur is interested in the first place, and didn't think maybe it had a place in the business or something. And usually, it's oh my God, leave it out at your peril. Bring those quirks in.
Well, and it's funny because like. To, you know, with niche projects. So first of all, somebody might just say, you know, well, I just do energy work. Great.
Mm-hmm.
And then level two, they're like, okay, so, well, I'm going to do some of that. I'm going to do a workshop on energy work.
Yep.
Cool. And then another one might be, well, they think of a particular niche and they say, okay, I really like to work with young men around like sort of becoming men, going from being boys to men.
Yes.
You know, or whatever. Cool.
Right.
That's great. But still, I feel like then it's like, okay, you've got a really clear journey you're taking people on. You've got this boat and you're taking some from island A to island B. But what I love about your work so much, and I think you're so brilliant, is helping people really design that boat itself. So that boat is something exciting. So that those young men or whoever the target market is would see that boat and be like, oh my God, that's my boat.
Right.
Those are my people.
Right.
I totally want to be on that boat, which is what makes the marketing so much easier because there's a resonance. And I don't think I've mentioned it in this course, but or even to you, but this idea there are four different levels of marketing. And the first is you can be better than other people.
Right.
You know, and that's something, you know, where you just demonstrably are producing results faster, more
Right. You're
easily,
just playing better. Right.
do it better. That's tricky because it, you know, sometimes it's just qualitative and it's hard to measure. And then somebody else might just get better than you. And then what are you going to do? The other one is you can be first. You know, you can be the first one in the market to do something. And there's a whole bunch of marketing theory around positioning and books by Al Reiss and Jack Trout about positioning and branding and about the advantages of being first. So there's that. Third, is just being different. So you're just unique, and you're not trying to, it's not even comparing yourself to anyone. You're just like, what I offer is a different thing. It's unique. If you're into this, if this is a fit, you go here.
Right.
But I feel like fourth level of resonance, where it's like walk into a coffee shop and it just grabs you. There's something about it, it's like, I love this particular coffee shop.
I feel so at home here.
I feel so at home. These are my people. And so when we're thinking about the niche projects, it's not just about trying to make it better or even trying to be the first one out there. Make it different is good. But really, it's like, how do you make it resonant? How do you design and paint your boat and have the right kind of sails and everyone's wearing the certain clothing or whatever on the boat? When people come across it, they're just like, holy shit, can I live on this boat now? Can I just, you know, be on this forever? And
that is so true. The way it's set up in the first place, the structure of it, the structure of the business. In other words, are you doing life coaching sessions from a telephone, or are you doing it on a mountain? So the structure, and then the personality and individuality you bring to it, which is another story about Mark Vollmer, which I must try to get in here at some point, which I think is great.
You know, I'd love to, I might be having him do a bonus call too. I've been working with him trying to create a thing. So yeah, actually, I'd love it if he shared his story.
That would be great. You know, I've really, really, really enjoyed working with him, and I think that, yeah, he has a lot to share, both in actually what he's sharing for his business, but in his take and viewpoint on sort of business design and so on. He's just got a really refreshing just way of seeing it. But yeah, kind of acupuncture school and all that sort of thing, but really found himself focusing on almost one topic, even though it's broad and has many different arms and legs. But the one topic is that when people come out of holistic schools of some variety, whatever they took, just like me with the Reiki, there's very much a tendency, because we don't necessarily know any different at that point, is to make it like everybody else's massage clinic and set up your acupuncture clinic just like that. And I won't even get into it now, but you often tell the story of the dentist, Patty Lund, and that's a very fitting story about how you can just recreate what that looks like, you know. And where was I going with that? Oh, yeah, so Mark. So what he decided to really focus on and really find out a lot about, and he's just awesome at it, is helping people, especially when they're first starting out, but at any time, maybe they've grown a bit tired in their practice or something, is what's amazing about you? What is amazing about you as an individual? And you do some kind of healing modality, but underneath that, way underneath that, much even bigger than that, you have something healing about you. What is that?
Yeah.
And let's bring that, let's touch that, and let's decide that your personality and who you are, as authentic as you can be, is possibly the biggest healing gift that you have. And just by being yourself, you will free people to do all sorts of things in their lives. And acupuncture then becomes almost the excuse to get together. And so he talks with people about that. He's got a brilliant series of questions that are just, you know, really great to help people kind of navigate these. Well, it's not something you figure out all at once. No one figures out themselves all at once. But just being able to unlock some doors and windows, you know, and let some personality out and some light in. And, he's going to do wonders in the holistic community, that guy. So I just thought that was another, beg your pardon, great example of a niche project. That's very much a niche project, isn't it? It starts with a niche, and what can we do? And so we've got a lot more to talk about, Mark and I. He's got some amazing plans. We lost touch in the last little bit here where I'm traveling. But yeah, watch that guy.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, and for the niche project piece, he created this workshop.
You're right.
Right, around how to, I can't remember what it's called, your hidden jewels or whatever.
Something like that.
Hidden gem.
Hidden gem, yeah.
Yeah, and his website is hiddengemhealing.com for those of you who want to check that. Really, have you seen his new website? It's so beautiful.
I haven't. No, I saw all the text and content for it, but I haven't seen it since it was finished.
It made me jealous.
Great.
I looked at the homepage, I was just like, oh, it's so pretty.
Oh, he would be jealous too then, for sure.
So he, so he had this notion of like this particular need of holistic practitioners who just aren't bringing their authenticity into it and as much as they could. And so he's like, why don't I just try doing a workshop? So he just led a little workshop as an experiment. He made some money. People
right.
loved it. They raved about it. So simple.
So he did another one and another one, you know?
Yeah.
And he's really good at it. And it's leading into a longer 5-week thing where it gets into not just the personality, but almost the energy of the person and what about their energy is really strong and what can we bring to the fore in the healing practice. Yeah, just great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any other stories or examples you can think of cool sort of niche projects or things that people have come up with?
It's not exactly a story, but it's something I think about a lot, Tad. I know you and I have had conversations about this, and I don't exactly know where it's going, but it just comes up a lot. And that's the idea of when we are truly struggling coming up with a niche project or kind of settling on a niche, or we really become a little bit more clear about the personality of people that we would like to work with, but not so clear on definitions, so they're not so clear as truckers or dentists or moms or something. You know, we're just basically have a personality in mind. I do think that there is an angle that can be tried there in terms of exploring the niche in a real practical, feeling it out kind of way, and that is to borrow other people's niches. It can work. So that has been a lot of what I've done, as a matter of fact. So I have this workshop that I started with 3 years ago about finding your calling in life. What the F am I doing with my life? And I had very broad idea of the personality of people that would be interested in that. They're going to be creative people. They're going to have a bent towards independence, self-employment possibly. They'd probably like to travel, you know. So there's a personality, but there was no clear definitions.
Yeah.
And with your help, Dad, at the time, I mean, you know the story, I found I was able to get introduced to other people's niches like yours. So the people in your community that follow your work seemed like a very good fit for what I was doing. So you talked about me, and we ended up traveling some workshops and so on. So that is, you know, for the person that's either really stuck or just cannot come up with something of a more clearly defined niche, I do think you can wander towards it right on the road, if you will, by sort of borrowing other people's niches and seeing if it works. So, for instance, that same workshop that you helped me promote around Canada and so on, turns out it also very much applies to people that work with vibrant single moms who are also adventurous about their lives and often very interested in self-employment and so on. And so there are people like me that can almost experiment by glomming onto other people's niches. So I just wanted to throw that out there as at least a discussion topic or something
for people
to think about.
What I like about it is, yeah, sometimes you can't articulate. You have a feeling about it. And you might see somebody else out there who's already doing something, who's reaching the kind of people you'd like to reach.
Right.
And you just have that intuitive sense like, man, their people would probably like my stuff. I don't even know why. I can't articulate it.
Right.
But yeah, that is something to explore and to sit with, like, well, what is it about their people?
Right.
You know, and what is it about them that attracts these kind of people? I think that can be a great doorway into what is my niche, just to look at, like, well,
that's
that
good
person.
Point. Yeah.
And so in a sort of theoretical way, but also, yeah, in a very practical way, it could be like, well, these are, you know, the kind of people I'd like to work with, and so can I do a partnership with them? Can I work with them? And
Yes.
yeah.
So, for instance, I'm just kind of making this up off the top of my head, but let's say a person, like some people start with a niche, you know, I'm just not this mom designing education for her daughter kind of thing. That whole idea came out of a niche, if you will, so the niche is clear. But other people start with, you know, a gift or a skill or an interest or something. So let's say
yeah.
someone has been through depression in their lives and it's been a big deal and they've found ways, and long story short is they've got a workshop or something, right, around
yeah.
depression. Well, that's the kind of thing that they could look around at people like you and people like me and all kinds of people that have communities and work with people and say, I have this thing on depression. I'm wondering if any of your people kind of would be interested in this, or is it something you could float out? And I'm thinking one way to kind of decide who might float something out for you is thinking about it the opposite way, about who would you promote? Whose stuff out there, what kind of stuff appeals to you so that you would share it on Facebook or that you would promote them, then chances are it probably might be reciprocal. At least you're on to the kind of people that you might try out.
That's really interesting.
I don't know. I'm just thinking about this all off the top of my head, Ted, I have to admit. But I find it an intriguing topic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to me, it's like as a minimum, that can lead to potentially a niche project. Because, I mean, you know, that can be a niche project where it's like you're not ready to do a workshop, you're not ready to lead an experience, but you know somebody else who is,
right,
who the kind of people you'd like to work with would do, and you could be bringing them in. You can be hosting somebody else's workshop
right,
and make money on that. You can still get paid, you know, if somebody like wants to host me and bring me into their community.
That's true.
We're happy to pay them for that, you know.
That's very true. Yeah, yeah. Oh,
I'm wondering
my gosh.
If there are any...
I just love the stories, and I love the opportunity that I've had to now, after a few years, have seen a lot of these stories and have a little better sense, or a lot better sense of kind of what works more easily for people than others. And, you know, definitely the lifestyle, just figuring out even the next chapter of what you would like your lifestyle to be like, I just think that leads to so many clear points of clarity, including around niche and how you structure your business and so on. So, yeah, I think the lifestyle is a real salient point. I think the designing experiences for people is a really salient point in this whole discussion. And, yeah, and you told me some stories of some of the things that people are working on in your community, and I just love the stories. They're great. So anyway, long story short is I'm glad to be here discussing with them, with everybody, and I hope it's helpful.
Yeah, well, and as we sort of move to wrapping up, I'm wondering if there are any other, because I think for most people they think of, especially like a service provider, life coach, holistic practitioner type, permaculture type, so there can be, well, obviously a workshop is something I can do. Or
yes.
I could do a talk. So that's the obvious thing. I'm just wondering if there are any other types of projects that you could name that you've seen people do that aren't the typical just workshop or talk.
God, now you're really testing me there, because it does seem like I attract a lot of would-be speakers. People that want to communicate in that way. But actually, the first idea that's coming to me is not my story at all, but yours. I don't know if you shared it already, but the story of the dog walking woman going around to the health food stores and all that kind of stuff. How did that go?
Dog walking woman, health food stores.
Is it ringing any bells with you?
No.
But anyway, it was a. I'll just kind of paraphrase and maybe do a bad job.
Sure.
The basic idea was we're looking for
In New York.
There you go. And I think
right.
it wasn't people that were new to town, and she would show them where to source different organic things. And
it was this woman who was, she was really passionate. It was in New York. I did a workshop there, which was a bit of a disaster, but I got the story out of it. But she was really passionate about organic food and people knowing if stuff is genetically modified and all that. And so she was passionate about that. She loves being outdoors. She didn't want to be indoors. as a lifestyle piece. And she also wanted to spend more time with her dog. She really loved her dog. And so this idea came to me of like, well, what if you did like walking tours where you could have your dog and you could walk people around Manhattan or Brooklyn or wherever and take them on tours of either grocery stores or I was like, God, there's so many different things. Like it could be a gluten-free tour of Manhattan, you know?
Yes, right.
Or a certain borough, a certain neighborhood, and you could just walk people around and take them into various holistic clinics or grocery stores and it really introduce them and walk them through the store and point out here's what's real and here's what's not. And she just so lit up. I don't know if she ever did it, but she, man, her eyes just lit up and she was like, wow.
Is that right, eh?
And I think I really agree with you that I think what stops people sometimes is they get a cool idea for a niche project and then they immediately start building on it. And
right.
then they think, okay, well, that would have to turn into this whole thing and I'd need all these systems. It's like, whoa, 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 slow down. Like, just
yeah, I need a website and I need this and that and the other thing. And first thing, it's all, yeah, unwieldy.
Yeah. And if I think the thing, too, is if a niche project is a real hot idea, you know, you've got a really good niche, you've really thought about how to make it cool and interesting, these are things that are not too hard to get a response on usually. Like the streetcar shows, they sell out so fast. When I did these, I did a workshop called the Hot Box where I did this whole day long workshop.
I remember,
And those filled up really quickly, partly because the numbers are small, but also because it was a real particular kind of experience. So yeah, it's, I think it can be easy to overcomplicate this. It can be easy to like, okay, turn a niche project into like a whole new business. First, like just having it as a little thing to try to test out and then to build on if you get a good response.
This is really making me think that an interesting question, again, really just kind of off the top of my head here, but it's just I'm really enjoying the discussion, and it makes me think that one valuable place to start an exploration of niche might be, where would you like to be? Where would you most like to be? I'd love to be in the mountains. I'd love to be in a coffee shop. I'd love to be at home, you know? Well, those sorts of answers, I would like to be traveling. Those sorts of answers then lead to ideas about what an income could be structured like. So it's a group meeting in a coffee shop, or in fact, it's this dog walking type scenario around New York. Or if you're home by yourself, maybe you're interacting with people online or something like that. And so the where would you like to be, and who would you, you know, if you didn't have to work, who would you like to interact with? Who would you like to hang out with? I can't help but think that would be a pretty good start.
Well, that makes me think of the story of the there's this condo realtor in Seattle who loved the cocktail lounges.
Oh, I love that story. Yeah, tell
and
that.
He loved hanging out there so much. He's, cocktail lounge or 5 to 7 or whatever, come and just ask me any questions about condos. And so he'd be hanging out at his favorite cocktail lounge where he knows everybody, and potential clients would come and they'd ask him questions, and he would just be so generous with his information and you know, go over papers with them and help them understand it. And he had apparently like a 70% conversion ratio
of
like people who were just sort of interested, visited him there, who became clients. Because the reciprocation, he'd given so much, so they felt like they wanted to give back. But also, they just built this relationship and trust with him. And they're like, God, you know, when it gets to the point where there's all these logistics and details to handle that we don't know how to handle, who are we going to go to? Of course, our friend who bought us a cocktail and hung out with us. And
yeah, right.
It didn't make him any money immediately, but totally fit his lifestyle, was really fun, and got him tons of business.
Indeed, I expect that might have been the only marketing he needed to do at some point.
Yeah, you know, and what a fun thing. Think about how much easier that might be to promote, where it's like you meet somebody at a party and they've got questions. And it's like, you know what, I don't know if I want to go into here at the party. Let's talk about it a bit, but you should come visit me at this cocktail place. You love it. It's fabulous, you know.
Yeah, right.
it's a whole experience again that you're inviting people into. Like, oh, I'm going to go talk to my condo, this condo guy at a cocktail lounge. Hilarious.
That's true, and a lot less maybe intimidating possibly than come to my office Tuesday
Wow.
afternoon and we'll have a chat.
Right, where I'll try to close you hard and
That's it. That's it. There'd
that's
be the
it.
fear of that. Yep.
Yeah, it is interesting to think about, yeah, what is the environment you'd like to work in? Because also, I think necessarily then that helps filter people, because your ideal
Yeah.
clients would also probably be clients who would love to be in that environment with you, or love to know that you were in that environment. You know, maybe you're a life coach and you just work out of a coffee shop, and that you do all your sessions while you're sitting there, and then your
That's a
website,
good
you've got
point. You're like,
pictures
why
of you,
not, eh? Yeah.
you know,
Yeah, and
and
you don't, and going back to full circle to the first of our discussion is you don't have to make that one decision for the rest of your life. It can just be a
right.
trial thing. So on Tuesday mornings, you're going to try a coffee shop. See if it works. See if you like it. See if other people like it, you know. You can try it out with no cost by kind of throwing it out on Facebook or to an email list or just telling all your friends or something.
Yeah, totally true. So let's wrap it up. And so if people want to reach you or work with you or are curious to learn more about you, your website is at bigdreamprogram.com. And I'm curious what you have coming up, or what how people could work with you, or they could get your support.
Right. Well, my God, these are my favorite topics, and if anybody, I expect all the people that are listening to this are playing with entrepreneurship, and probably underneath all of that, even under entrepreneurship, they're just independent spirits, and they're the kind of people that I certainly love to talk to. You know what I would suggest is that I have such a variety of things on the go in terms of e-courses that are available right now, as well as free stuff and videos. There's quite a bit on my Facebook page, the Big Dream Program Facebook page. There's a lot of videos and stuff there now. But is go to the website and drop me an email. Tell me what you're interested in or what's up for you, and I will totally point you the right direction. That'd probably be easier than kind of trying to list stuff right now.
Sure.
But yeah, definitely doing a lot of online stuff right now, which I love, and it's very accessible for people, of course. But I also love to travel, and Dad, you helped me figure that one out. But that's almost a niche in and of itself. But I just wanted to see the Rockies with my kids. And my wife doesn't care for road trips very much. She gets kind of a bit car sick and grumpy. And so I said, well, how about I go? You know? And so the kids and I traveled across Canada and back again to the other coast and taught workshops along the way. And it was just the experience of a lifetime. Again, coming back to the idea of, and I did it by, sorry, I was leading to a point there. I did it by borrowing, if you will, or being introduced to other people's niches, people like yourself. So, geez, where was I going with that? I had some kind of point. It was supposed to be a great wrap-up point, Dad, and I just lost it. Oh, well, there it goes. Are you still there? I've been cut off. I guess that story wasn't so good. I think, Tad, if you can hear me, we've lost you for the last half a minute.
Hello?
Oh,
Oh,
there you
sorry.
are.
Skype dropped me off.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
That reminds me, I was being interviewed in a for a radio show at some point, and I was in like a lot of radio stations. There was a university one, and it was in a cave, you know, somewhere in the middle of the student union building. And it was just myself and the person interviewing. And anyway, she asked me this question, and I was just starting to answer, and she sort of signaled that she had to leave the room and let somebody into the studio. So I was left to answer the question all by myself in a dark room staring at a cement wall. And I completely blanked. I couldn't even think of what it was that I was trying to say. And oh my God, she had to come back and rescue me. That was similar to that experience.
Well, thank you so much for joining, Alex. And everyone, I so recommend checking out Alex and his coaching. He does just such a brilliant job at helping people weave in all of their quirks and their gifts and their strengths and lifestyle choices into really reshaping the boat to be something that is just inherently and authentically attractive to the kind of people that you would most want to work with. To me, it's the flip side of the coin of doing this niche work. This niche work is sort of, in some ways, the explicit, the yang side of all this, where we pick a target, we focus, you know, we go out. And Alex has got a lot of the more of the yin, sort of how do we figure out what we want and create that space so that we can be attracting those people. And his stuff is so brilliant. I try to weave in pieces of it, but the process that he can take you through, especially in the one-on-one coaching that he does over like 6 weeks, is pretty extraordinary. He and I have done a bit of work together where he was helping me, and it was really affirming and wonderful. So I can't recommend it highly enough. Thank you so much for joining. I've got to run, but we will, we'll be in touch. And everyone, I'll email you the audio and the transcript of this when I get it.
Thank you so much. We'll see you later, Ted. Thanks,
take care,
everybody.
Bye.
Bye.